the story of a tech worker who immigrated to and now lives in Canada. When you come to Canada, or if you're here already, should you get a job or should you start a business? We'll cover tips for getting jobs in Canada and tips for starting a business in Canada on this Bernie Chats with Saeed Semchi. Now let's listen to his journey and find out which route he took. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bernie Chats. We're recording again for jobsincanada.com, and we're with Saeed Semchi. He's a business coach and consultant who immigrated to Canada. He helps people who want to do the same, immigrate to Canada, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about that. Saeed, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, Bernie. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for agreeing to come on the show. Maybe if you want to start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, about your journey to Canada and what your experience was like.
Sure. Yeah, that was quite adventurous experience for me, actually. I graduated from computer engineering back in Iran. I grew up in Iran and I started to basically building on my own business. That was my dream was to start my own business. But very soon after I started, I realized that for me to be able to play in the international market, in the global market, I have to be outside of that country, is not well connected to the world. I was searching to see which country I can migrate in terms of being able to basically grow family. That was my other goal as well. So my research came to Canada and I decided to move to Canada. Didn't have that much connections here. Basically, I had zero connection. My language proficiency was very poor. And I knew that I had to start all over again. So everything that I have done back in Iran, I had to start it again and establish myself. So when I migrated here about 25 years ago, I started understanding the business culture, the business dynamics here, understanding different sectors of business, and then how I can basically contribute here. So different aspects that I took. So personal training, improving some of the skills. I had one coach that he helped me a lot. And one of his recommendations that I'm glad that I took his recommendations many, many years ago was to attend the networking groups and some of the other aspects. So I had to put myself out to go and connect with the people and to be able to understand the business. I started working as an employee, and that helps me as well, understanding the dynamics of the business here. So there are different aspects. So you have to be outside, you have to understand now the new culture, new language, as well as the way that people are working when you are migrating to a different environment. Basically, I started all over again, start looking at where I need to improve myself, where I can contribute immediately. Obviously, every one of us, we need to have some income in order to grow, and then building your network, building your asset, and building the skill sets and knowledge. I attended the MBA program, learned about business coming from the engineering side. That's always good combinations to marry engineering with the business acumen, and then finding your way out. So that's I like to share my experiences here in this podcast today. It is not simple, it is not easy, and it is not one size fits all. So everyone has to go to their path, but I'm willing to share mine.
So Saeed, what first struck you as being different when you came here? Was it the culture or was it the way of doing business? What really stood out to you when you arrived here?
Yeah, basically everything was different. And we are talking about late 90s that also the dynamics here was changing. So it's not that I came to the environment that was completely established. So we are talking about the time that internet was booming. We refer to the dot-com era.
Yes.
So even the business environment here was continuously changing. So for me coming from abroad, I didn't realize that the people, basically in Canada, because of the technological advancement, they are also going through a massive transformation. So I was not aware of that for the first few years. One example is I came here late 90s, and then, you know, some of the folks, and I actually age myself right now, that, you know, we were talking about the Y2K. Mm-hmm. So for the people that are not familiar with Y2K, the computer systems in 20th century, when they start building it, they say that, okay, we have to do two digits for a year is good enough. So they had two digits for a year. Once we get to the year 2000, that two digit for a year becomes 00. And lots of those systems was getting, you know, error. So couldn't really perform. So that was lots of work for us as a software developer to fix those very simple issue. Mm-hmm. But that created lots of the job market.
They were talking about how the world might actually, like, the whole system of commerce and everything might just shut down, banks and everything. So it was very concerning for a lot of people. Some people said, okay, whatever, you know, it's not going to happen. But it did create a lot of jobs.
I remember that December of 1999, people yes. were lining up on the ATM machines to get the cash.
Yes.
Because some people believe that all the systems are going to be crashed. So that created lots of the demands in the market. And then also dot-com era was there. There was tons of startups was coming up like a mushroom every single day. Everywhere you see that there are new startups. And then they were looking all for software developers. Something that, you know, 20 years after that happened again during the COVID, and I'm going to touch base on it a little bit later. But my point here is that I came here, there was tons of job for software developer.
Mm.
And I was really amazed. And, oh, great. I made the perfect decisions. I got here. And then the funny part, Bernie, was back then, because of the demand for the software engineering, the recruiter and then the firms, they were calling us. And then I was changing jobs every 6 to 12 months and getting additional raise, doing the exactly same thing. So I thought, that, oh, Canada is great. They are calling me. They are moving me from one company to the other company. They are giving me a whole bunch of the cash for doing the same thing. So again, being naive, didn't know the whole kind of the upside downside of the market. I thought that I'm going to be like that for forever. Then hits 2001. Y2K issue has been resolved, and now we are in 21st century. The system has been retrofitted and fixed, and then dot-com burst. So that was a realization for me that, oh, okay, so there's a cycle. So in any industry, in any sector, there's a cycle. So it goes up and comes back down. You need to always prepare for the next cycle. And that was kind of the eye-opening for me, being in the free market, being in the market that's being driven by so many different factors. I realized that, so if I have this type of the trend today, I cannot assume that the trend is going to be the same okay. for the next 5 to 10 years.
That's very interesting. What I get from that is the takeaway for listeners is if you're coming to Canada, there will be economic cycles and you want to know where you're at in that cycle when you come to Canada.
Yes. Some of us are coming from the countries that they are relying on one type of goods for export. For example, lots of the countries in Middle East, they are relying on exporting oil and gas. So those economies are different from economy like Canada, which is diverse. So as diverse as economy in Canada, then you need to understand that there is a, you know, if you are depending on what sector you are in. So if you are in the resourcing sector, if you are on a mining sector, so there is always been up and down in those sectors. But then overall economies has also their up and down. And, you know, for example, this year, everyone's talking about now recession. In the past 2 years, right after the COVID started, to me, that reminded me exactly the same experience that I had 22 years ago during the dot-com era, that there was a huge demand for example, software engineering. To move, because everyone wants to move their business to the internet. Back then, we call it the web 1.0. So that was the first generation of internet. Everyone was moving there. The bubble burst, and then they realized that, you know, most of those businesses are not sustainable. And then some companies, like, you know, as we know today, like Amazon was able to survive during those time and then flourish. So some companies like Meta, Google, these companies flourish significantly. But then I would say 90% of those dot-com companies, they couldn't survive. then that kind of the time for stabilizing it until we get to the next big thing, which was COVID hit it. During the beginning, the first 18 months of COVID, same thing. Everyone wants to go digital. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to be able to work and have the team members to be working remotely. Mm-hmm. So that also creates additional demands in the one sector, which is now we are talking about the software engineering. As we have seen, there was a massive amount of the demand in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And now that almost, you know, the pandemic is over and people are going back to the normal, and we are experiencing some, I would call it, normalizations. You've seen on the news that companies like Google, like Meta, like Microsoft, they are laying some people off.
Thousands.
But then compared to the number that they have, mm-hmm. you know, we are talking about companies, they have hundreds and thousands of engineers, and then mm-hmm. they were hiring, I would say hiring like crazy in the past 2 years. Now is the time for normalizations. That makes sense because they were hiring too many people, and now they want to kind of right sizing it. Mm-hmm. But that also creates opportunities because we are always looking at news at these big companies. So these big companies, we know that, oh, they are hiring or they are laying people off. It becomes news. But then the smaller companies, the startups and the small businesses, you don't hear about them on the news. But when you tallying it up, we know that 80% of the business in Canada, that's the stats in Canada, 80% are small to medium-sized businesses, not the large enterprises that you are hearing about them in mm-hmm. the news. The opportunity from my point of view for those companies is that now they have a pool of talents available to them that has experience working on the big enterprises.
Yes.
And then these small companies that they couldn't afford because it's hard to basically compete with the big tech giants. Now they can hire more people. The economy is not really, yes, we are talking about the recession. It's going to be recession, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, 1 or 2 quarters. But then in the long term, again, looking at the cycle, if you want to migrate to Canada, in the next, say, 12 to 24 months, don't be discouraged by, oh, it's going to be recession, it's going to be less job. It is cycle. So when it is going to be recession, there's going to be always an area of growth coming after. So right. You have to think about, by the time that the companies are now hiring mass, and then the growth, I have to be ready, I have to have right skill sets, and I have to be basically knocking these people's door. By the time that you are hearing on the news that, oh, everyone is hiring, to me, that's a little bit too late. You have to prepare now. Mm-hmm. And that's my personal opinion. Again, I'm not an economist, but I think that the recession will be short-lived and it's going to be soft. That's just my personal opinion.
So when there's a recession, it's the time to improve your skills, to work on your resume, to get ready for when we're out of the recession. If you're in an industry where the recession is affecting your industry. But I think a big thing that people often overlook is that during a recession, there's a lot of companies that prosper. You know, I could think of a few. The security industry prospers. And a lot of times there's a lot of home renovations going on. So there's different industries that can prosper during a recession. And I think if you're job hunting, it's wise to look at those at these times.
Yes, that's completely true. And, you know, again, bringing my personal experience here, mm-hmm. when I got laid off back in 2001, mm-hmm. that was kind of, then I said, oh, okay. So because I was working like crazy in the previous 24 months because of Y2K, because of the .com.
Sure.
And then that I realized that, okay, so if for me, to be able to ready to grow for the next cycle, I have to, as you mentioned, I have to improve myself. So that was the time that I enrolled in executive MBA, and because I had to still work. So I didn't want to stop working. So I found my next job. But then I took that opportunity and invested on myself, get my business degree. So then I have my engineering degree plus my business degree. So then I can basically navigate through the next wave of growth. Mm-hmm. And that helped me as well. Again, I'm not promoting that everyone has to get MBA degree, but I'm saying that, especially what I'm saying for the younger people, that our high school systems and some of our education system doesn't teach us enough in terms of the different aspects of business. You go to education, you get your post-degree educations, then you learn about that specific field, whether it is engineering, whether it is science, whether it is art. It is always helpful to also have a good sense of how, you know, in general, we are speaking how money works and mm-hmm. how business works, and then what are the different aspects that you have to understand, especially for new immigrants that are coming and they are seeing the, sometimes that's happened to me as well. That is a cultural shock. You go mm-hmm. and you've been hired by a company, or you are looking to establish your own company, and you have this mindset when you had the previous environment. Now you are coming to the new environment. You have to understand that there is always a differences. You know, we started our conversations with regard to differences. So it's a cultural difference. It is difference in terms of the how people are communicating. A couple of examples I can bring it up.
Mm-hmm,
for example, the credit systems that we have in North America is quite different. So here, you know, you do the business based on the credit. In part of the world, that credit system is not there.
So you're talking about financial credit, extending credit when people purchase things, giving them 30 or 60 or 90 days to pay. That doesn't exist in other parts of the world, but yeah. Here it's more, there's more of an honor system that way with the credit system.
That's correct. And then, yes, people can abuse the credit systems, but you can abuse it once. You can abuse it once. Your credit is damaged. Then after that, no one's giving you that credit that you needed for your business. And then running mm-hmm. your business, definitely you need to have that credit. So again, back to the new immigrants, they are talking about, you know, we talk about the language, you need to speak the same language, you need to have a networking, but then you need to also look at those details, you know, how the contract works, how the communication works, how you find your next customers, you know, what that means. You know, everyone says, okay, you have to build up your network. But for a new immigrant that doesn't know anyone here, you know, how you build up your networks, where you go, where you start.
Mm-hmm.
The good part or good news is that there are tremendous amount of opportunities available here for new immigrants. There are some opportunities that has been sponsored by governments, whether it is a federal government or the local government. We have organizations that are supporting new immigrants. We are organizations that are building that kind of a acumen and then helping the immigrants to establish. And then the next level would be that up to that individual to find out the group of the people that they have a kind of a similar mindset or in a similar sector that they can start building that relationship with them and finding that, okay, so now I'm in the construction, I'm in the renovation, I'm in the software engineering, I'm in the different field of engineering, or I'm in the art side. So where I'm going to find a similar minded people that are getting together. COVID created a little bit difficult. At the same time, we are seeing that now it is not only the local. So pre-COVID, then you have to find those groups locally. Then post-COVID, the border has been kind of diminished. So now you can connect to the people virtually, and really doesn't matter if they are in your local environment or not, in your vicinity or not. You can connect with the similar-minded people across the globe. So that creates also other opportunities. So my point here is that as a new immigrant, it is not that I need to find a job. It is that how I'm going to prepare for finding the job, but also being able to make it sustainable, because you may want to change the job, you may want to grow, you may want to establish, or you may get to the, similar to myself, you may get to the situation that you have a job for any reason, for, you know, business, the company, or for whatever, and then you lose that job, you have to prepare for the next one. And you want to shorten the time that you are between jobs. And the way that you are shortening your time between jobs is that by building more and more of the network and being more prepared, you know, keeping your LinkedIn up to date. It's something that's very simple. It seems to be obvious, but then sometimes we are in our day-to-day life and we forget that I have to prepare for, you know, I hope for the best case, but I have to prepare for the worst case scenario.
So I guess creating the connections in the network of people that may be able to guide you on where the opportunities are when you need that kind of assistance. And also, I suppose, guide you in just functioning in Canada on a day-to-day basis. So you mentioned organizations that can help out for new immigrants. Do you want to mention a couple of them and maybe talk a little bit about how they are handling things? Are they all online now, or are they still handling things in person? I know there's a couple of large organizations in Vancouver. Maybe you're familiar with some, and you could tell us a little bit more about them if you have experience with them.
Sure. They went all 100% online because of pandemic. Now they are coming back and they are having some in-person activities, something like Mosaic that is in different places that is helping the new immigrants. The government has organizations, is YWCA, and the subsidiary of those organizations that is helping for the new immigrants. There are areas that it is usually the government funded for the minority in business. There are the women in business organizations,
right?
And then there are the groups that they are kind of the getting together for a specific topics. Organization, the engineering, doctors, lawyers, they have much more organized. But then you go to the different, even the on the construction, different field of the construction, they are very well organized. One thing I learned, that's my personal experience that I like to share it here, is as an immigrant coming here to Canada, I didn't know anyone. I was afraid making connections and even ask people, hey, I'm here, this is my questions, I want to establish business, I want to look for a job. I was afraid of asking those type of the questions. It's like, the people are not going to help. What's in there? Why they should help me? But to my surprise, generally speaking, people are willing to help. Mm-hmm. If you ask, if you don't ask, you are not getting anywhere. You ask politely, and that's my personal experience. 100% of the time, you ask politely, you will respond or reply politely as well. Mm-hmm. And my experience is that majority of the time, people are willing to help. Yes. There are some people that may say, hey, I'm too busy, come back later. That's fine. But majority, based on my experience, majority are here to are willing to help. Mm-hmm. And you just need to basically put yourself outside, you know, just staying home and just, you know, doing in front of a computer. If you are not connected, you can connect people virtually, that doesn't matter, either virtual connections or in-person connections, but you need to reach out and don't be afraid. Most of the time, people are very, very willing to help. Mm-hmm. And there are people that are, someone like myself, I went through this, and I had people that helped me. If someone approached me, I will be able to help as much as I have time or as much as I'm able to. Mm-hmm. But that's my message. Go reach out to the people and don't be afraid.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So when you mention the organizations, there's really two different types of groups of organizations you mentioned. Organizations that are specifically helping people that are what we call newcomers to Canada, immigrants, et cetera. And the other types of groups are industry groups like construction trade associations, software engineering meetups, perhaps. So there's two different categories there. One of them, again, catering to newcomers, and the other one catering to industry professionals or other common interests.
That's correct. That's exactly. So the point here is that the new immigrants reach out to both. There are area that they can get the general guidance, general help, reaching out to the government funded institutions. And then depending of the area that they want to basically do their job or perform or establish business or find the employment,
right,
then they need to go to a specific sectors. And then the meetups usually are informal and it's a great opportunity for networking. And yes, there are always conferences and trade shows that they can attend.
Yeah, that's great. I've been involved in different meetups and actually a lot of my network in Vancouver, because I moved here. I'm a Winnipeg refugee. I moved here 25 years ago. Or 23, I guess. And a lot of the friends that I associate with here, I met either in a sailing group that I was involved with for 8 years, or internet marketing meetup. So an industry group, in other words, that I participated in for a number of years and was a founding member. But the point is, I made some really strong connections through those groups?
You never know when you are meeting people and what's going to be happening. So my personal experience, one of the businesses that I established many years ago, I just started with a buddy of mine that I met him at the gym. So we were just going to the gym, and then we were just chatting, you know, chatting about different aspects. Hey, what do you do? What, you know? And then we were completely separate industry. I was in the technology side. He was in the construction side. But we were talking as well, you know, again, just very casual conversations at the gym. And then we said, hey, what about this idea? If we merge them together, there's some opportunity here. And then we established a business together. We had that business for a couple of years before we sold that business. Again, you never know when you see some people. Mm-hmm. Just have that connections, and then you can build up your network.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got a position like that one time. I was in a cafe, and a gentleman a couple of tables down just struck up a conversation. And probably about 4 years later, I was in between positions, and we connected on LinkedIn. And he said, yeah, I could use somebody with your skills. So it ended up being a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Exactly. Again, not every, you know, when we look at the different people, different characters, so we have introvert, we have extrovert. Mm-hmm. I'm by nature introvert, so it is harder for me, or it was harder for me, to make the connections,
right,
and then make a new connections. But then I had to train myself to basically overcome that challenge. We were part of the group that my coach asked me, go to these networking events, and then there was a few of us. Our challenge was that we have to exchange 20 business cards within 2 hours time period. So that was our challenge. So we had to go to these networking events, and we had to make connections. Back then, we were physically exchanging the business cards. And then the challenge was that I had to collect 20 business cards from 20 strangers within 2 hours. So that is kind of it is, you know, for me, being introvert, being new, not be able to speak for a word. So that was kind of the going outside my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So that was the whole purpose. So my coach was helping me to get out of my comfortable zone, and then reaching out to the strangers, and then saying that this is me, this is Saeed, this is my background, this is what I'm doing it, and then make that connection, ask the people, and then exchange the business card. So these are the small steps that can help you to get to basically build up your network, but also to understand the other people's background, and then get comfortable when you go to the bigger groups, and then get blended with the environment. I think that these type of exercise is very important for the new immigrants to put themselves outside and then be able to communicate and connect with other people.
Yeah, one thing I've found too is that there seem to be two different kinds of people that come over. They take one of two different paths. One where they get fully entrenched into their original culture, so the Iranian community in your case, or another one where they try to make connections with people of other backgrounds so they can get a more broader scope on what the Canadian experience is and create a less of an insular network.
Yes. Yeah. No, these are all important. And then again, we are here talking to our, you know, sharing our experiences. You know, we can bring many, many different examples, but you have to put yourself outside, and then you have to understand people's backgrounds. One thing is that's very important to know that we are in the country that it's built by immigrants, whether they are coming from different part of the world in the last 250 years. And recently, we also have to acknowledge the First Nations that's been here for thousands and thousands of the years.
Yes.
So the combinations of immigrants that came in, and then the culture that First Nations is bringing in, for the new immigrant, is very important to understand that. Mm-hmm. And then once you understand the background, and again, some people like me, I like history. I like to, you know, when I got here, I also studied the history of Canada. Although that it is a very short when you are starting from the time that Canada has been formed as a country.
Yes.
But then the history of Canada doesn't start at that time. So there are lots of the culture, lots of the different groups that they were living here, that in order for yourself to be able to blend, you need to understand that and acknowledge that. And to me, it's very important that, again, these are not the stuff that's been, you know, it's been on the news or, you know, you are reading when you are outside of the country. But when you are coming to Canada, you have to acknowledge that it is a new country. It's been built by the immigrant, but it has been built on a very strong First Nations communities that have been living here for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge that and then understand the different people's background and be able to basically blend and have the similar values. So we are coming here from different backgrounds, but then the values that Canada is bringing to me is very, very important. And then as Iranian Canadian, I value my own culture that's coming from Iran, but also I value the culture that I gain and understands mm-hmm. when I'm here and living in Canada.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. You gain the culture.
Yeah.
The blending of the culture, like, pardon me, the blending your experience among different cultures in Canada. Again, one thing we didn't mention about that is it's really the best way to practice your language skills. Mm-hmm. Because if you get involved, if you're Filipino and you come here, for instance, and you only get involved with the Filipino community, you're probably going to speak Tagalog the whole time. You're not going to be speaking as much English, perhaps. So having that blended experience. So would you like to segue a little bit into business then and perhaps tell us a little bit about your business experience? And I really want to focus on what's different here. And then where the opportunities are.
Sure. One thing that helped me as well, before, you know, as I said, I had my own business back in Iran. But when I came here, I knew that I cannot just assuming that the business environment is the same. I have to learn the business environment here. So my personal decision back then was, okay, I'm going to go back to the employment and I find a job. As a software engineer, as I said back then, that was a good amount of a job available for me. And then understanding the business environment here before establishing my own business. Going through this path and then having that experience is important. So for me, I have experience working with the big enterprises, companies that back then had more than 200,000 people as employees internationally, as well as working on the startups and then building on my own startup. There are differences when you are working for a startup or when you have your own startup and when you are working for a big enterprise. So there is pros and cons for all of those items in terms of that there is a tremendous learning opportunities that you are learning from the big enterprises. But maybe you just basically you are very, very deep into that one very specific items versus in the startups. You have a variety of the tasks that you can practice and you can exercise while working there. So there are both pros and cons. So my experience that I have and the knowledge that I have is because of the understanding of both worlds, both enterprise as well as startups.
Interesting. And what have you found different in those in starting up a business here compared to starting up a business in your home country or other experiences you've had?
There are, first of all, starting a business in Canada, it is much, much streamlined. Canada is one of the top countries in the world that we call it the business-friendly country in terms of their business law and regulations. It is very friendly for startups. The main difference was that I had my network when I started back in Iran. I had to build up the network here. So I had to spend a few years to build up to understanding it. The environment is quite different. Again, setting it up, the structure, it is very, very simple in Canada. It is not time consuming, is not costly. But then putting it a proper structure is very important. So you have to educate yourself to understand the different structure that is available here. And then how that, you know, the different aspects. So there are 100 different aspects if you are establishing your business. So the best way would be to practicing it before you start your own business, understanding it, either getting the coach or having a kind of the mentorship or having or working as a apprentice. So that is very important. Don't assume that, I've seen lots of people that are coming and asking me to help them, because they are learning it on a very expensive way. They already started something. They ran to the problem. Now they are seeking coaches. They are seeking advice, versus they should do it the other way around. So one thing is that don't assume that you know everything. Don't assume that one person knows everything. And then reach out to the right people with the right skill sets that you need. So, always bringing these, the Art of War, the book from the Chinese generals. In order for yourself to be successful, you need to know yourself. You need to know your enemy. We were doing it as part of my practice. I still like the SWOT analysis. I like to do the SWOT analysis with the folks that I'm coaching them. Putting into the paper doesn't have to be SWOT or any other tools, but putting in the paper, what is your strength? What is that you are bringing on the table? But then most importantly, everyone can talk about, oh, I'm done that. This is my skill set. That is easy part that they can speak to. Yep. The part that they are sometimes and often difficulty to bring it is that, where is your weaknesses? Where are the areas that you do not know? And that's our nature. So always is going to be the area that I do not know that I do not know. Okay. Yeah. If I know that I do not know that area, then I can go and ask. That is the biggest no. And some people get blindsided for the area that they do not know that they do not know. Mm-hmm. So that having a coach, having a mentor can basically flashing out saying that, okay, are you honest with yourself? Do you know your strength? Do you know your weaknesses? And identify your weaknesses, identify the area that you need help, and then identify where you can find help. So when you identify what area you need help, then that's kind of the easy to go and seek to get that type of the support. That piece, sometimes you need to have a kind of a second. Sometimes, for our health, we go to a doctor. Doctor is diagnosing something. And then you are saying, oh, should I get the second opinion? Same thing here. You have it in your mind. You talk to someone, get the second opinion, get the coach looking at your business plan, get the someone, basically looking at the skill set that you have and the skill set that you do not have, that you have to either improve it yourself or you have to bring the other people. I always like the quote from Obama. He's saying that, someone asked him what he's going to do after he finished his term for the second term for the presidency. And then he said he has a couple of different ideas. But one thing that he mentioned is that you need to have a good idea. That just is important. But as important as good idea is to have the right team in place. Lots of people have good ideas, but then to me the number one challenge is that they do not have the right team in place to execute that idea. And some people are saying, oh, I have this idea, I know how to execute it. And that is sometimes we get to that aspect that I know everything and I can do it everything by myself. Some people are learning to do it in a smaller scale, but if you are looking for the bigger scale, you need to build up the right team around yourself and not people that have exactly the same skills. We are seeing that a couple of the people are getting together, they have exactly the same skills. That's not going to help you. In order for you to establish a business or to bring a new service and product to the market, you need to have a variety of the skills. And then again, back to that process that I have is that identify the gap that you have and then how you're going to fill in the gap. Are you going to improve it? Or are going to find the consultant, or are going to bring other team members or hiring team members that fill those gaps. Then now you have the full package and you can execute that idea.
So Saeed, if you're, I don't know if we want to pick a place, but let's say you're in another country, you're in a second world country, let's say, and you're thinking of coming to Canada and you're trying to figure out how to come here, what to do. And you have a little bit of resources or some business savvy, and you're thinking, okay, should I work for somebody or should I create a business of some kind, whatever it may be? Maybe it's importing, maybe it's a trade, a service of some kind. Do you have any tips on how somebody can weigh out those two options and come up with a clearer idea of what their best option might be?
It's a very good question. So depending if that person has that experience in that specific sector or industry, then that would be different. Some people are coming, and because they are migrating to Canada, they also want to apply the skill set that they have. Say that I'm in trade or I'm a business person. I have this knowledge. That specific business is not really applicable in the current market, or it's not growing. I need to move to a different sector, but I want to carry the skill set that I have to the different sector. So in those cases, I usually recommend them to basically go and find the places that they can do the internship or apprenticeship, or actually working in that specific sectors to gain the full knowledge. Alternatively, some people have done it in the past and they are in the same sector. They really do not need to understand the kind of a know-how. They have the know-how, but they need to basically put around themselves, they need to put together other skills that they do not possess at that time, whether it is a financial acumen, whether it is the business acumen, the marketing acumen, or even the building up the team, so the human resource acumen as well. So there are many different aspects that they have to bring, maybe bringing other people's. So in summary, I look at that specific individual, and then depending of where is their skill sets, then I coach them, you better to work in that industry for a while, or you better to build up your team. You bring your know-how, but then you don't have the other aspects, and then work together and to establish that business. I am not immigration consultant or immigration lawyer. My job is on the business aspects. I love right. coaching. So I love to, especially with the startups, with the people that they want to establish the new business or new services. That's the area that I'm willing to help them, and that's my expertise. Whether they need, you know, on the strategy side, helping them to find their roadmap, as well as on the tactical side, something like creating or developing the business plan. And the business plan has a different concept to it, you know, marketing plan, financial plan, and the resourcing plan.
So basically structuring the business and making sure you have a plan to operate it.
That's correct.
You help with identifying the opportunities as well.
It can be part of the process. You know, I had, you know, a couple of the examples that
sure.
I my recommendations to them was that let's find out a good franchise for you. Franchise, again, I'm not against or pro franchise. I'm not promoting any type of the style. But then depending of that individual persons, I recommend that you better to go the franchise approach, because that comes with the structure that you need. Perhaps the sector was fairly new, and then establishing and then trying an error would be costly. Then franchise reducing the cost, reducing the risk. That's always, that's very important, Bernie, that when we go to this process, it has to be a very systematic process. Mm-hmm. People usually are passionate about what they want to do. They spend lots of the thinking about it, but then coming to a coach or coming to a mentor, kind of some of my job is to be act as a devil advocates. So my job is to show them the area that is risky for them. Mm-hmm. Naturally, we are always optimistic. So we want to, okay, if I do this stuff, if I go to establish this business, or if I develop this product, I think I'm going to be successful. I think that I know how to do it. So we tend to be a little bit more optimistic. And that's another issues with the startups, and especially with the founders, is that they tend to underestimate the cost of, you know, developing the service, establishing the business, and or developing a product. They tend to underestimate the cost of it or the challenges of it. And that's part of my job, to bring them a real picture, to yeah. bring them a complete roadmap, and then giving them the hint that, hey, did you think about this one? Did you right. think about if it doesn't go as the plan? What is your contingency? What is your mitigation plan? Did you think about these external events that if occur, then it's going to impact you? Did you think about even, you know the one of the issues that we have here in, especially in BC, but also in some places in big metropolitan in Canada, in Vancouver and Toronto, is finding the people that are willing to work. So you may have, depending on your business, you may need to have someone with the kind of a lower wage or closer to the minimum wage. Can you find those people in your area? You know, mm-hmm. I live in the area in the North Shore of Vancouver. People cannot live here with a minimum wage. If yes. your business is required to hire minimum wage people in North Shore area, where are you going to find them? Right. It's not really readily available. And that's one of the another aspects that, you know, you go to the countries that have a massive amount of the labor force, then you never think about this. Okay, well, if I need, you know, 10, 20 people that they do some sort of a job, the kind of the labor job, and I have to pay the minimum wage, there are part of the world in Iran, in Mexico, that you can find them easily.
Yes.
You cannot find them easily here. We don't have that massive of the labor available for you. So right. If your business is requires that manual labor job, where you are going to establish it and where you are finding those. So these are the examples that you have to think about it. And then when you do another aspect, the environment, have you think about all of those aspects? So that would be the helping them understand and then bringing them again. I don't want to sound like I always been pessimistic, but part of my job is to give them a real picture and then identify the area that is a risk and then help them to have the risk mitigation plan in place.
And these are primarily for people that want to come to Canada or they're newcomers to Canada and they want to establish a business.
That's correct.
They're going, you know, either create a business or create a job for themselves.
That's correct. And then understanding that, you know, creating business, any type of the business, there are many different aspects in addition to know-how. So helping them to understand all different aspects. To me, we always, and again, in our nature, we always hope for best, but we have to plan for worst. Yeah. So having a proper planning in place, spending time to identify the area that I may need to do something differently, that is important. And one aspect, Bernie, that I need to bring it up here is that we all, you know, I've done with lots of these founders, and they have one idea in mind. No one knows if that's going to be successful or not. We are going to try it. So I help them to try it, and then we get to the area that it is difficult, it is problematic. So our original plan, we reached to the time that it failed. And I really believe in the fail fast, and always encourage these founders and entrepreneurs that don't afraid of failing. Failing is actually learning. So we are either winning or we are learning. Okay. Right. So take the failure as a learning. Then don't be afraid. The one thing that is very, very important and that I always bring up to my coaching session is that you need to reduce the cost of failure. If you reduce the cost of failure, then you can afford to fail fast. You can afford to fail frequently until you get your holy grail. Always bring in that example of the gentleman, Milton Hershey, who started the Hershey chocolate company. We know that Hershey chocolate, it is one of the largest chocolate factory in the world, based in Hershey in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And I read the history about Milton Hershey. The Hershey factory was not his first business. That was his seventh business. He was originally from Switzerland, migrated to the US during the Big Depression. So during the Big Depression, he started building the different businesses. He always wants to be in the chocolate business. But then he started with a high quality chocolate. He was importing it from Switzerland, you know, not even cacao beans, just the chocolate, and then trying to sell it here. He failed. He failed miserably 6 times.
Hmm.
Until he realized that we are in the Big Depressions, the economy is bad, people doesn't have or they cannot afford to buy the high quality chocolate. Then he changed his model and he thought that what type of the basic snacks I can develop that it tastes like chocolate, it has some chocolate to it, but it is kind of the low cost that the average people during the Big Depressions can afford to build it. So the Hershey Chocolate Factory, which is one of the largest right now, that was his seventh business after failing 6 times. And wow. We are seeing this type of the stories all over the places in the history that they fail until they were successful. The aspect is that always people are talking about the success and no one talking about the failures.
Yes.
My job and my coaching practice is that encouraging them to fail fast. It is nothing wrong with that. It is a learning process,
right.
But reducing the cost of failure.
If you're going to fail, then do it fast and economically.
Exactly.
Yeah, makes
sense. And learn from it and apply it next time. So pivoting is very important as part of this process. You know, we start with point A. We think that we are going to end, we are going to one straight line to point B. Most cases, I would say 99% is not a straight line. we have to pivot. We have to pivot. We may not even get to point B. We may get to point C. But at the time that we get to point C, that may be deemed to be successful. Mm-hmm. So again, have the plan. It's very important to have the plan. But then you have to be able to be flexible, be agile, be nimble, and pivot as needed.
Makes sense. So Saeed, are there different, are there some examples of people that you've helped out, and what, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how they started out, why they went into a particular business, and what their process was, and, you know, how it turned out for them?
Different variety and different backgrounds. I can bring up a couple of the examples. I recently had a client who was a dentist back in Iran. He moved to Canada, and then for any reason, he didn't want to continue that the practice. But then he still wants to be in the health sector, but then applying in the technology. So he had a couple of different ideas, and then basically he got stuck. He said, I have these different ideas. I'm new here. I don't know where to go, where to start, and then how I'm going to filter it. Which of these ideas is worth pursuing it? Which one I should not pursuing it? So that's very, very interesting. Someone has kind of the medical background, loves technology, wants to marry them together, bring something that is very, very important right now. We are looking at the telemedicine. It is that the sector that is growing. But then because it's new here, because also new in that technology sector, he got stuck. So I helped them. I'm still, you know, helping him to navigate through this process, to understanding that, you know, he has a very good skill set. The idea is a great idea. But again, back to my previous comments, to identifying the gaps that he has. And, you know, part of our journey was identify gaps and what other skills that he needs to bring to his team. Great. It's not going to be just himself. You know, he needs to bring the other groups to help him, and then form that team that they can be successfully executing these ideas. So that would be one example. Another one.
And if I can ask, what are some of the skills that the other team members are bringing to the table? What kind of team members is he putting together for that?
So at very, very generally speaking, we needed people on the software skills. We needed people on the hardware skill, because that's part of the idea that we are working on. It requires some sort of the material or hardware. So there's going to be the piece of hardware that has control by the software. So we need that engineering kind of a mindset to bring it to the team. And then the marketing mindset, because it's going to be a new product. And then you have to do that, branding it properly. These are very important skills. So you have a great idea. You build a team to develop that idea. But if you don't have a customer to buy it, you are not going to be successful. You need to find out the way that the people that are outside willing to pay for your service or your product. So that type of the skills is very important to bring it in the picture. So that's what we are forming that team together to navigate through this process.
That's great. You were going to mention another one, were you?
Another one from, you know, again, not outside of kind of technology. I'm also helping another gentleman who actually came to me and asked, hey, I want to open up a coffee shop. That's what he asked me. Can you help me open up a coffee shop? Someone, I never ran any coffee shop in the past, although I have people that are in the food industries. But then as we navigate through the whole process and identifying, I realized that really the coffee shop is the way that he's communicating, because it's easy to communicate, but really he wants to do the B2B business. He really doesn't want to have coffee shop to basically sell a cappuccino or espresso to the people that are coming. He's looking actually more on in terms of the roasting business, and then some other aspects of the coffee business.
So he doesn't want to be a retailer. He wants to be a supplier.
Exactly. So, and then because of his background, I realized that he never done any D2C, direct to consumer side of the business. He always has been doing the B2B. Coming to Canada, again, that's kind of some of us, and that was including myself when I came here, is that I'm nervous. You know, you get a little bit, you know, scared, or is it working? If I'm going to work on the B2B side, if I have to deal, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 contract, what's going to be look like? Is it always easier if I sell a cappuccino and get $3? So sometimes that kind of the people are scared to doing it or thinking about big aspects of the business or another aspects of the business. So that's what, you know, that's another example. So I like to bring it up. And then I realized that really he doesn't mean to be on the B2C side. He wants to B2B because that's his skill set. He has a good kind of the concept, but then the concept makes sense if we move him from B2C to B2B. He doesn't need to then be dealing with a store that is expensive that he has to rent it and then having the people to work there and then so on and so forth. He can have just a home office and start that business. He needs another aspects of it. That's what the conversations bring into the picture. You can think about lots of stuff, but then when you open it up and when you are reaching out for support, then even talking about your idea, you are hearing back. And that can create another set of ideas for yourself. My job is asking the right questions and probing the right questions to them. So then they say, oh, okay, now I realize that really I want this, not what I started with. So that is sometimes it is kind of a very much, you know, exciting to me to bring in people to their higher potentials. I also do lots of the sports. And then as part of my coaching practice, I bring aspects. I look at the coaches in the professional coaches on different sports, whether it is soccer or it is hockey or it's football, and then understanding that how they bring the best of their players. And then I'm applying those in my practices that I can bring them to the next level. I can find their potentials and then help them to tap into the potentials.
That's great. Yeah, there's always a lot of transferable skills that are quite effective from sports to business.
That's correct. Yeah, no, I love sports my entire life. I was always been active. I'm following many of these professional coaches. I love soccer. I play in two different leagues here in Vancouver. I play in the Vancouver Metro League. And then, first of all, it is a team sport. Then it's not just individual. Even if you are Cristiano Ronaldo or Leo Messi in the world, one person cannot make a big difference. You have to be part of a team.
Right.
And that is also very important in the business. Yes, you know, there are businesses that is solo. You know, we have lawyers, we have professionals that they can work on themselves. But then majority of the business, you have to be on the team. You have to be a team player, regardless if you are the owner or you are the CEO, you still need to be the team player.
That's a great point and a great analogy.
Yes. And then the coaching aspect. So as a leader of the business, whether you are the founder or you are leading business, you need to basically coach the team members and then help them also to grow. So I'm borrowing a lot from sport.
That's good. Well, it's always good to have a trusted advisor in your corner. So that's a valuable service. And I know, having run a company, you know, one company I ran for 12 years that had a number of employees, there were times where I just needed somebody to talk to and explain the situation and help me think through, because so you end up making some decisions that are quite strategic and, you know, your business can be affected one way or another.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Well, that's great. So how can people get a hold of you? And is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off, Saeed?
Sure. They can reach out to me. We can put my email at the end of this podcast. It's Saeed@CapilanoBusinessConsulting.com. People can reach out to me on the LinkedIn. It's Saeed Shamsi. You can find me on LinkedIn. And I'm looking forward to connect with people. If they have any questions or anything, feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks for all the valuable information. And I'll put some links in the profile. I'm just going to say it again, because I think it's really important to emphasize. So Saeed is not an immigration consultant or an immigration lawyer. He's strictly giving practical experience and advice on business in general, and acts as a coach and a business consultant.
Thank you for making it clear.
Sounds great, Saeed. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. Bye.
And that concludes this Bernie Chats for jobsincanada.com. Please feel free to subscribe, like, share, and comment. Thank you so much for supporting the channel. I look forward to seeing you on the next Bernie Chats for jobsincanada.com.